It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and as we approach the end of summer, we'll talk about some of the flowers that can keep bringing beauty and drama to our landscapes in August, September, and even beyond. Later this hour, we'll also answer your questions about the plants in your life. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio, or you can give us a call, 866-780-9100. With me today, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Cindy.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. Richard Giron is also here, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And I have to say, right now, the most impressive blossoms that I see are in stands of native prairie. Prairies are just on fire right now, especially the cup plants and some of those yellow blossoms. It's really, really impressive. But this is the time of year, Cindy, where we see a lot of our perennials start to falter a bit.
They do. Sometimes in the heat of summer, they kind of wane just a little bit. And there's a pause sometimes in August. And then it kind of ramps back up again. And you're right, the prairie plants, some of those coneflowers, the gray-headed coneflowers, the cup plant, the prairie dock, they're just making a big statement. And some of those can make great statements in your landscape, too. So it's a good time to think about what to add to your landscape to kind of have that August-September bloom so that it's as spectacular as it was in spring.
Well, and I find that this is also a time of year that when I drive around, I see blossoms in other people's yards and feel a great deal of envy, like the hibiscus right now. Oh, it's just so beautiful.
They are fantastic. There are hardy hibiscus that are blooming, and they have these massive dinner plate size blooms in red, pink, or white. And we have them all over campus at Iowa State, and they are spectacular. They're as nice as the peonies were in the spring. So, and they're just kind of a nice welcome back to campus kind of a thing. Yeah.
Well,
it's a great one to have.
They look tropical. It feels for a moment like you're on vacation.
It does. It feels very different because they are very, it's a very unusual perennial. It looks like a shrub, but it's a perennial and it does nothing until it gets warm. And then it just kind of explodes. So it's a fantastic one to consider.
Well, since we're focusing already on the perennials that bloom that we can put in our yard, let's talk about some of the other perennials that bring some color and life to our yards this time of year and also in the next couple of months.
Right. So Eupatorium or Joe Pieweed is another one that's doing really well right now, especially if it's in a situation where it has some moisture. So if it's super dry, it may not be doing quite as well. But it has these kind of lavender, tiny star-shaped flowers on top. It's another 5-foot plant.
I was going to say, that's a tall plant.
It is. It is. But the butterflies, the bees, the number of pollinators that it attracts just magnifies how gorgeous this plant is in the landscape. So if you have the place to handle something of that size, and even a dwarf one is going to be about 3 to 4 feet tall, then this is a great one to have right now.
So it's, and it's just purple, like I said, which you have a weakness for.
I do have a weakness for a lot of things purple. I will agree. Well, I have a weakness for a lot of things that aren't pink. Let's put it that way. And this one's purple enough that it's fantastic in my garden.
All right. Yep. Well, you know, we talk about hostas all summer long, of course, because they're one of the things that really grows in the shade in Iowa. But this is also a great time of year for hosta blossoms, right?
Right. For hostas and coral bells, these are kind of staples of the shade, and they have really nice blooms, if you're okay with that. And some hosta growers aren't. But if you allow them to bloom, you're attracting hummingbirds to your yard, because that's one of their favorite flowers. And those lavender or white flowers, there are species of hostas or cultivars of hostas that the flowers are incredibly fragrant, and they're usually those late summer blooming types. So they're often blooming right now.
Well, and I'm not a hosta aficionado. I inherited some hostas when we moved here, but why, what is the benefit to not allowing your hostas to bloom?
I think Some of the hostas, they look better. They maintain a tighter clump and foliage when you remove the blossoms, so you don't allow them to bloom. I think a lot of hosta aficionados, too, they don't want them setting seed, so they definitely remove the blooms after flowering if they like the blooms. It just kind of depends. Some people think that it detracts from the beauty of the plant, but I think it depends on the flowers. I would let them go for a year and see what the flowers are like, and if they're not real showy, then okay, then that's the one I would remove. But otherwise, I think they're pretty.
All right, and we talked about the hardy hibiscus. There's mm-hmm. another really beautiful blossom that also looks kind of tropical and exotic, the rose mallow.
And that's the same thing. Rose mallow and hardy hibiscus are common names for the same thing. There is another hibiscus out there called Rose of Sharon or Althea shrub that's a woody that has that kind of similar flower, smaller, that should also be blooming now. But yeah, hardy hibiscus and rose mallow, essentially the same thing, maybe a different species of hibiscus, but they're both that hardy hibiscus, probably hybrids.
All right. And we talked earlier about some of the native plants that are blooming. Mm-hmm. Asters fall into that category.
Oh, yeah. So you can't deny that asters are like a fall flower. You'll see them along the roadside. So think about the asters, the goldenrods, the sneeze weeds, all of those things that kind of bloom along the roadsides that are native, that are great in your landscape as well. And some of those along the roadsides get really big. They might get a little leggy, but there are more compact, more manageable cultivars of all three of those that have this kind of daisy flower, which is fantastic to see, usually starting in September and through October.
Well, you had already mentioned the black-eyed Susan and the gray-headed coneflower. My black-eyed mm-hmm. Susans are fading at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some that continue on.
There are. There's several cultivars of black-eyed Susans that are considered long-blooming, so they'll bloom for about 8 weeks, maybe 12 weeks. So they will continue through August. But they're ones that are a little bit ahead of the asters, a little bit ahead of that sneezeweed or even the goldenrod. But you can't deny it. It attracts a lot of attention when it's in bloom.
Any other perennials we should be thinking about?
I think you should also think about one of the easier ones to grow, sedum. There's lots of sedums, that autumn joy sedum. Everyone's kind of into that kind of succulent. It likes it dry, so it will do really well. It's very adaptable, and it's another one that blooms really late. There's Russian sage that also is starting to bloom right now, that's very late as well. And I'm trying to think, and turtle head. This is another one that it has pink flowers that resemble a turtle's head. If you ever seen a pink turtle, I guess. I don't understand. But it's a very cool 3-foot-tall plant that's very disease-free. So it's really tough. And all three of those are pretty easy to grow. So great ones to have for that August, September, and into October bloom.
Now, what if you'd like to plant a tree or a shrub? Of course, most trees and shrubs tend to blossom in the springtime. How about late bloomers in that category?
Yeah, the category gets smaller for this time of the year. For shrubs, hydrangeas are all about it, and there's a lot of panicle hydrangeas that are really showing off right now. For trees, think about things like Seven Suns flower. I love Seven Suns flower. I'm in my office right now. I'm looking at one, and the flowers are still in bud, so it's still going to be another 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks before this opens. So it generally opens, you know, late August into September, and then the butterflies are crazy on this one. So a very nice kind of white flower. And it gets about 20 feet tall, 20, 25 feet tall. So decent kind of small tree, large shrub. And then if you want something really late in the season, our last tree usually to bloom is a hamamelis or a witch hazel. There are some fall-blooming witch hazels that really don't start to bloom until sometime in October, maybe November. So with these tiny little thread-like blooms, that it's really very few other things are blooming in the landscape, and then that's when it decides to show off.
Every time,
which is kind of cool.
Yeah, every year around this time, of course, next week is when the Iowa State Fair would be starting, and
right.
Thousands and thousands of people visit the Discover Garden at the Iowa State Fair, and that's a mm-hmm. garden that has been specifically designed to be in full bloom in late summer.
mm-hmm.
Every year.
It is. So, and you think about all the things that are planted there. So, yeah, it's perfect.
Absolutely. And the hibiscus there are as big as my head.
And, yep. and the hydrangeas are there, too, and they usually have several different kinds. So they, and, you know, Rose of Sharon, and then a bunch of annuals, too. But they definitely target that kind of August time frame, which I guess you could still go visit it. I don't know if they're maintaining it. I think it would still look good, actually.
I'm sure that it would. And mm-hmm. is it hard, do you think, for some gardeners to think about interest this time of year? We are so spring and early summer focused.
We are, and we really appreciate those spring blooms because after a long winter, you want to see it. It's harder this time of year because we're a little tired of gardening. We're ready for things to kind of slow down. But I think I tend to get like a little bit of a second wave. And when I see these, you know, the surprise lilies appearing, the hydrangeas or the hibiscus starting to bloom, it brings a second wave of joy because you have these brilliant colors and it's kind of that final hurrah for the end of the season.
I have to say, my Facebook feed has been full of surprise lilies lately. I think that people who have them are very, very proud.
Yes, and they've done really well this year. And I have there's a secretary in horticulture that cuts some and put them in a vase, and I've been impressed at how well they are as a cut flower. So pretty cool.
We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It is Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa with me, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. They're here to answer your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. You are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. Give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Richard, I've been checking in with you pretty much every week over the past few weeks about the state of the moisture in our state, and things are getting very dry. Are you concerned?
Well, yes. We did have some spotty rains in the Ames area and to the west. Parts of Ames had a drenching rain yesterday afternoon. I think Carroll, Denison, I think they had some rain. So it was helpful, but it's still very, very dry.
And, of course, that's something we commonly experience this time of year, so we'll just see how it turns out. We already have a lot of questions from people. Susan has a question. Richard, I have a few indeterminate tomatoes. They're just going crazy. What should I do to tend them? Tame them? I don't want to do anything to reduce the production.
Just let them grow. If they're in a cage, just let them kind of flop over. Keep on watering them if you're dry. And if they want, they can maybe prune off the top in early September. But at this point, just let them grow.
All right. It's always a good answer. this is a question from Lynn in Iowa City. A July 22nd article in the New York Times described the invasive jumping worms that ravage soil and damage plant life. Have they shown up in Iowa? I know the answer to that question is yes, because we first did a show about them a couple of years ago with Donald Lewis. But Richard, do you want to add anything to that? Or are they getting to be more common?
I don't know how widespread they are, but I think there is an article on our website on those, but I'm not sure how widespread they really are at this point.
All right, interesting. Well, and you can let us know if you have seen them. I know that I've seen various posts and received an email in the last couple of weeks from somebody who was surprised to have found them. Another question. This one is from Jen for you, Cindy. Mm-hmm. If I want to transplant Joe Pye weed, would the spring be the best time to do it?
It would. So anything that blooms late in the season, you don't want to try and transplant or move it when it's actually in bloom. That's really too stressful for it. So if I would wait until spring as it's just starting to come up, then it's a lot easier to handle. You're not moving a 5-foot plant, and then you can get it reestablished so that it blooms well for you in the fall.
All right, 866-780-9100 is the number to call. We've been having a little trouble with the phones. We're hoping that we've gotten that worked out, so give it a try. Uh-oh. 866-780-9100. But if you don't trust the phones, email us, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, or you can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. Mary says, on my walks in the last week, there's been a delightful lily-like fragrance as I pass wooded areas. There are no visible flowers. Any ideas what this could be, Richard?
Boy, I do not. And I would have to assume something actually is blooming, but I can't think of anything offhand.
All right. So it'll have to remain a mystery. Any guesses from you, Cindy?
I'm trying to think if there's a lady leaf lily bells that might be blooming in the woods that have smaller flowers, but oh, I don't know. Sweet Autumn Clematis is coming, but I don't think that would be in the woods. So there's got to be something nearby, and it's probably a flower. Just look a little more closely.
All right, let's go to the phones. John is on the line in Adel. Hi, John.
Hey there.
Hi, what's your question?
I take care of a pollinator garden at our school here for an after-school science program, and obviously social distanced. We're looking to get the kids in there either in the fall, maybe you have to wait till spring to kind of get in some more plants. Would fall be a good time to plant any native pollinators, or are we going to have to wait till spring to do that?
Richard?
Well, if you can find plants at this point, they may be kind of hard to find, but there are things like butterfly weed, purple coneflower, black-eyed Susan that you might find at a local garden center. And if you can, if they're potted, you can definitely plant them this fall. I would try to get them in the ground probably in September or October.
Okay, so the biggest issue is probably just finding them.
Right. I would think you can still find some at this point, but obviously the later you wait, you're not going to find them. So.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, John. And if it remains dry, the kids can spend a lot of time watering, right? That's a good plan. April's on the line next. And by the way, the phones are working fine now. April's on the line next in Des Moines. Hi, April.
Hi. I have a question about canna bulbs. I got some in a free plant group on Facebook, and the woman had told me that they're from a farm of her friends, so they're like over 100 years old. We weren't really sure what we were getting into, but the things are like 6, maybe 7 feet tall, and we love them, so we want to plant more. But I'm wondering if we were buying new bulbs, if they were going to be a lot shorter.
Thank you. Cindy?
With cannas, there's a lot of different types of cultivars, and there are some that are dwarf. So you can get some cultivars that are smaller than 6 or 7 feet tall. The cool thing about cannas is if you grow them for a few years, you can divide them so you can get more of the kind that you like if you just kind of have a little patience and divide them. Do remember that you need to pull these in for the winter because they usually don't overwinter reliably in all parts of the state in Iowa. So it sounds pretty cool. And, yeah, you can probably pick some other cultivars that are a little bit shorter. You're probably going to buy those rhizomes in the spring, though. I'm not sure you're going to find them now.
All right, April, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And we've got Joyce on the line next in Monticello. Hi, Joyce.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My tomato plants are really suffering. They start way down by the bottom, by the ground, with the leaves drying up and falling off. And I take them off, and they just keep getting all the way up the plant.
Richard?
Well, right. Tomatoes are susceptible to a number of foliar diseases, and it usually starts on the bottom, where you may see spotting of the foliage, brown spots. The rest of the leaf turns yellow, and over time, it progresses upward on the plant. Very, very common. As far as what to do, you really can't do anything at this point for this year, but as soon as the plants die, those plants should be dug up or pulled out, and all that debris carefully picked up and destroyed. Don't leave it in the garden. Next spring, plant your tomatoes in a different location, ideally where they haven't been...
I can't. That's all the space I have.
Well... So if you can't rotate, you might even try growing them in a pot or container. That does work, especially the determinate types. They don't get that big. But if you have to plant in the same area, then basically grow them in a cage or some support, and you're going to have to use a fungicide, and you're going to have to spray beginning probably in June, and you're going to have to do
and
it
what
on
is
a
the
regular
fungicide?
Basis. So... Excuse me?
But if that's a chemical, I don't want to use chemicals on what we're going to eat.
Well, then your options are maybe putting them in a pot or container, because these diseases will overwinter in the soil. And so that's why we rotate to get away from that area, because they're in the soil and they will reinfect the plants when we put them in the same area. So... your choices are a little bit limited as far as what you can do.
So if Joyce were to put containers in the same place, like on top of where she's been planting her tomato, would that put them at risk of getting the same disease?
It would, because what happens is they're in the soil, and then when it rains hard, for example, those raindrops hit the ground and they splatter things. And they can splatter things onto the foliage. That's how they get there to begin with. And so if you were to put them in a pot, you want to move them somewhere else where they get plenty of sun. It could be a porch, it could be a patio, whatever, but as long as they get plenty of sun, they'll be fine. But putting them in the same area in a pot, they're probably still going to get it.
Okay. But on the bright side, Joyce, tomatoes do really well in containers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's a good option.
The determinate types.
All right, Joyce, good luck with that. Thanks a lot for your call. Next up, we've got Cheryl in Pilot Mound. Hi, Cheryl.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a question about my Siberian iris. I've had them for quite a few years, and it seems like each spring they produce fewer and fewer blooms. And I'm wondering if it's a combination of maybe less sunlight, and maybe, though, I almost think maybe overcrowding. But mm-hmm. if I, because the foliage is still beautiful, but, you know, so if I were to have to separate them, I just don't know how to do that. If I start in the middle or around the edges, or what are your thoughts on it in the first place?
Cindy?
Right. And yeah, and you probably nailed it. So it's probably a combination. If it's not getting as much sun, that can affect the bloom quality. And after a while, Siberian iris do kind of overcrowd themselves, and they might need to be divided. So what you're going to do is just, and usually late August, September is a good time to do this. You're going to dig up the whole clump, and you're going to cut it a little bit like a piece of pie into wedges so that you get more of that kind of vigorous outer growth along the crust edge and less of that kind of overcrowded center in each of your kind of pieces. And if you cut it into like four big pieces, then you can plant one back in the original spot at the same depth that it was planted before and find new places, maybe sunnier locations for the other three remaining Siberian iris divisions. Water them really well, because it's been so dry, so water really well, and give it another shot of water maybe in, you know, as late as you possibly can into fall, into winter, and then make sure that it's, you know, well watered in the spring. And it might be a year or two before it blooms well again, so give it a couple of years to readjust. But usually that reinvigorates or rejuvenates the plants, and you'll see new growth and hopefully new blooms.
Well, thank you. One thing, though, I hadn't thought about it, that I have to take them all out and then put some back in rather than just removing some. Is that important?
It's a little more work, but in doing that, then you're taking a good look at the root system, and then you're finding the places which are more vigorous or less vigorous, or you're looking for any insects or other damage. It's a little more work, but it usually pays off in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Cheryl. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, or you can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. Next up is Ethan in Iowa City. Hi, Ethan.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Yes, we just moved into a house in the east side of Iowa City, and we have three big ash trees in the backyard and a ton of ash tree bolete. I'm wondering if there's anything we can do to limit how many we have, or if they're just always going to be there, if some years will be worse than others or such.
All right. And for people who don't know, ash tree bolete are?
Richard? A mushroom.
Okay, a mushroom.
A type of mushroom, right.
All right.
There's really nothing you can do to prevent them from coming up. And yes, their numbers are going to vary from year to year, but there's nothing you can apply to the ground that will stop them from coming up.
So
okay,
your ash trees may not be much longer for the world, Ethan. That Richard,
right.
Will that mean that the bolete would disappear as well?
I'm not sure how quickly that would happen. I'm not sure on that, but I would assume eventually they would.
All right. That was not a piece of good news. I'm sorry, Ethan.
Yeah.
No, that's all right.
Just a little silver lining to a bad situation with the emerald ash borer. But welcome to Iowa City. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Glenn is up next in Indianola. Hi, Glenn.
Good morning. Great show. I love it. Got a question about control of some consider wildflower, sometimes called wild carrot or Queen Anne's lace. And it is running wild this year. Tried to control it early in the spring, I suspect too early, with a product known as Pasture Pro, which is a particular salt of 2,4-D, and applied at a quite heavy rate, anywhere from 1 quart to 2 quarts per acre. And I feel that we were too early in the spring, and so control seemed negligible at best. Any recommendations on what to use to control this stuff?
Well, wild carrot is a biennial, and so the first year it forms just kind of a rosette of leaves near the ground. And then the following year, it grows very quickly and flowers and produces seed and then dies. I think a broadleaf herbicide in the fall would hopefully control that fairly well.
All right. And while we're on the subject of eradication, we have this question from Hillary regarding Japanese stilt grass. Help, what's the best way to eradicate it? It seems to have taken over this year. Richard?
Well, digging might be an option, unfortunately. I don't know how big an area it is, but if it's a small area, basically digging it up, removing as much as you can, and realize you may have to go back and do it again and again and again.
It's excellent exercise.
Being persistent.
Okay. Cindy, this is an email question from Macy. What's the secret to growing dahlias? They're so beautiful, but seem tough to grow.
They are a little long to grow, so you have to be patient with them. They're usually a tuberous root that you purchase in the spring and then you plant outside. They also require a lot of care. So you're planting that tuberous root in May or June. You're watering it, you're fertilizing it, you're probably going to have to stake it at some point because they get so large, and then they start blooming sometime in late July or August. They need full sun, they need at least 6 hours of direct sunlight a day to really bloom well, and then you have to watch for a few insects as well. So I think just having new bulbs or tuberous roots and maintaining them, you know, indoors, overwintering them indoors, and buying new ones as well every year, that then it starts to get a little bit easier. But it takes a little effort with dahlias, but they are magnificent when they are in bloom.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. With me, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. And, of course, they are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And here's a question from Twitter. From Annie. Richard, what is a type of grass I can plant on a steep hillside, something that would not require frequent mowing?
Well, obviously, you could put in some native grasses. They do just fine. They don't have to be mowed. For example, there's a little blue stem, Indian grass. Now, these are fairly tall plants, but they would do fine. They have a very deep root system. And once established, basically very little care.
All right. That's the dream, not having to mow that hillside. So I think that sounds like a great plan. All right. Let's go back to the phones. Harvey's on the line in Mason City. Hi, Harvey.
Hi. I planted in the front of my yard late last August, probably. I had new sod put in, and it's been doing pretty well. But now it's turning kind of brown in spots. Can I just let it go and it'll recover next spring? Or maybe I better start watering it?
Well, I think if you're in a dry part of the state, you may want to go ahead and start watering. And I would try to put on about an inch and a half a week. I would try to do that in one application or two applications about 3 to 4 days apart. And do that, and then maybe go ahead and fertilize around mid-September. And with the cooler temperatures, with the moisture, with the fertilizer, that should revive it, and it should look much better by late September or October.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Harvey. Next up, Corinne in New Providence. Hi, Corinne.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
I had a question about horseradish. A couple years ago, I was gifted part of a very old stand of horseradish. I got it transplanted successfully, and it's taken beautifully at my house. So I had a question. I have never dug up and tried to, you know, I can and do things like that regularly. So I was wanting to process the horseradish. How would I go about digging it up? How much should I do? What time of year should I do it? And then also for transplanting, when I move here in about a year, do I do the whole thing or leave some of it? How would I go about doing that?
Cindy?
Yeah, so with horseradish is pretty durable, and you can really dig it up any time from spring through mid to late summer, if depending on when and how you want to use it. So it's a root system that's used. I wouldn't dig up the entire thing. I would dig up just a small portion since it's only been in maybe a year. And then you're going to dry down that root a little bit. You're going to peel it, and then you're going to process it into a cream or, you know, food process it or dry it, kind of depending on how you use it. You don't need much horseradish to go a long way. So that's kind of the good thing about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can just even grate it, I think, and use it in things. I'm not the cook, so probably how to process it and how to keep it and store it. The answer line might be better, or maybe Richard knows, but I do know the plant itself is pretty tough and will tolerate
repeated harvest during the growing season if you want to take a little bit here and a little bit there. And do the same thing when you're ready to move. Just transplant, take a little bit with you, and you can put it in a container. It'll do well in a container, and then you transplant it to your new garden whenever you get there.
All right, Richard, do you have anything to add?
Well, horseradish can become a weed. It's a very vigorous plant, and so I would harvest it every year. And in doing so, I would use the bigger roots, and then I would take off some of the smaller ones and plant those for next year. But it can be very, very aggressive. So I would harvest it every year, definitely.
Perfect. That answers all my questions.
All right, Corinne, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, let's go to Penny in Iowa City. Hi, Penny.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for letting me talk to you.
Sure.
I have pin oaks in my backyard, lovely, huge, tall pin oaks. And I know you are not supposed to, you know, do any pruning or trimming of those trees until it gets cooler. And I have someone lined up to do that, you know, in the late fall. But in the meantime, I have a deck, and the pin oak is, you know, reaching over the deck, and it's growing into my, you know, sun umbrella and just kind of causing havoc on my deck. And I'm wondering if I could just trim those branches, you know, that are kind of impinging on my umbrella and so forth, or would that be risky?
No, you can. What you want to do is get some latex house paint and a brush, prune off your branch, and then immediately paint that surface with the latex house paint. You're basically kind of sealing it so that there's nothing to attract the beetle that transmits oak wilt. So that's what you want to do.
Oh, okay. Well, that's easy, I think. Perhaps I'll start decorating my tree now. So.
All right, Penny. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Mary is up next in Perry. Hello, Mary.
Good morning. I want to know if you can plant perennial grasses in the fall, and what type of grasses would be appropriate for landscape areas.
Cindy?
Yeah, you can plant perennial grasses in the fall. I usually like to plant larger perennial grasses so they're in larger containers in the fall because they're really doing their thing sometimes in the fall. And you want to have as much of an established root system or a big root system if you're doing some fall planting. As far as options, you have lots of options. There's some smaller ones like, you know, I'm thinking of the feather reed grass. Sorry, go ahead, Richard.
Prairie drop seed.
Prairie drop seed, the dischampsia, which is kind of a hair grass. There's blue oak grass. There's also some taller ones like the miscanthus and the big blue stems and the switchgrass. So you have lots of options. Sometimes you're limited on availability at a garden center, but they should have plenty of grasses because this is the time that they're often seen and sold, and they work really well in the landscape. So,
okay, I appreciate your answer.
Just
thank you.
Yeah, water them well, and then I might mulch them well this fall or winter as well, so just so you know where they're planted because you'll have to cut that back in the spring. Or in late winter, and you'll know where that new plant should emerge.
All right, Mary, thanks a lot for your call. Let's go back to some email questions here. This one's from Char. My Bobo, Little Lime, and Annabelle hydrangeas are blooming fine, but my favorites, Endless Summer, have not produced one flower this summer. They have eastern exposure, and I fertilize and water as usual. The bushes are green and healthy, but no buds. What do you think happened this year? Richard, I think you must know what happened this year. That was a knowing laugh.
That's a big leaf hydrangea, and they are extremely finicky. They just, they're not reliable. And some people refer to them as endless bummer or something. It just doesn't bloom very well. So the best that you can do is wait in the spring, let it leaf out, and then just cut out the dead wood, because it can bloom on old wood and new wood, I believe. and mm-hmm. hopefully it's going to bloom. Make sure it has plenty of moisture. It has those big leaves, and if it's dry, they wilt very quickly. So make sure it has plenty of moisture, and just realize that it's probably not going to bloom that well some years, and some years it will. There are some improvements on that variety. Bloomstruck is an improvement where it tends to bloom more reliably than Endless Summer.
Okay, so maybe pick a different favorite. Is that the advice that I'm hearing?
Well, if it disappoints after so many years, it may be time to replace it.
All right, we have another question about hydrangea bushes on the line. I wonder if it's similar. Laura's on the line in Dubuque. Hi, Laura.
Hi. Yeah, that was my question. That's pretty funny. The same thing I have, but I've had great luck in the past. This has been a beautiful plant, and this is the only time this summer that I only got one big, beautiful blossom and then nothing else.
Yeah, that's just the way they are. They're just not like the panicle hydrangeas, the smooth hydrangeas. They'll bloom reliably every single year. The big leaf hydrangeas, they just don't. So if this is a bad year, but most years are good, I think you're doing something right.
All right, Laura, thanks a lot for your call. Here's a question from Roberta. I've noticed yellow leaves and wilting showing up on previously healthy lilacs and viburnum and boxwood in our Ames neighborhood, and it seems to be a widespread problem. What's going on? We have lots of oaks, and some have yellow leaves and bare branches. Any thoughts, Cindy?
Well, I don't think it's all the same thing. I mean, there might be some drought stress that could cause some of this, but I don't necessarily think it's a disease that's, you know, hitting everything. So if it is an environmental issue, check the soil to see if maybe that lilac or the boxwood needs to be planted. And then this one might be, you know, you take some pictures of some individual plants and send it into the plant and insect diagnostic clinic, because there might be something going on with the boxwoods, and there might be something going on differently for the lilacs or the viburnum. Does that make sense?
Hey, Richard, you want to add anything to that?
Well, if the symptoms are fairly uniform where the leaves are kind of yellow, one thing that could be would be a lack of moisture, because mm-hmm. if they're dry, plants under stress, some of the leaves will turn yellow and maybe drop off prematurely. If it were a disease, they tend to be very, very plant-specific, and something that would attack a viburnum would not attack a boxwood, typically.
All right. And it's not entirely unusual for plants under stress to start showing fall color this time of year, right?
Right.
It's not. Yeah.
Right. When plants are under stress, they typically give you some type of warning sign, like maybe wilting, yellowing of foliage, early coloration, that type of thing.
All right. Here's a question from Larry in Elkader. We have lilac bushes of various sizes and ages. The leaves on some appear totally dead and brown. Some have patches of dead leaves. Others seem healthy. Any suggestions on what might be happening? Richard?
That definitely sounds like a disease. And we're seeing quite a bit of that this year. So what I would suggest is taking two or three photos and sending those to our plant diagnostic clinic. Take one or two photos of the entire plant, and maybe one or two photos, close-up photos of the affected leaves, and send those to the clinic. Their email address is pidc@iastate.edu. So pidc@iastate.edu.
All right, 866-780-9100 is the number to call. We still maybe have time for a couple more calls. You can also email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. From Greg, I've had consistent success preventing this tomato fungus issue by heavily mulching my garden area with springtime grass clippings from my mainly bluegrass lawn. This also helps with moisture control. Before the grass goes to seed, I bag all the clippings and lay down a very thick layer, then plant the tomato in a small clearing and install the cage around it. The only problem is that robins can detect worms under it, and they insist on flinging the mulch hither and yon.
So they do that.
Right. That takes us back to that comment from a listener about tomatoes. But again, if you don't move your tomatoes, you're going to have some trouble.
Right. But growing them in a cage, mulching may reduce the severity of the disease, which may allow you to get a crop. Watering and applying the water directly to the ground, all those things may help maybe delay it or reduce the severity.
All right. And here's a question, Cindy, from the Dearth family. What is the best time to divide hostas and what is the best time to divide lily of the valley?
So hostas you can divide almost any time that it's growing. You can divide them now or late August into September. They're easier to divide in the spring just as they emerge because you have less foliage to deal with. So that's one possibility. Usually with lily of the valley, it's the same. This is a tough plant. It's equally as tough as hosta. So you could divide that in spring. But if you do it in early spring, you're probably going to impact how well it flowers that year, which isn't necessarily a horrible thing because then it'll get established. If the lily of the valley still looks good now, you can divide it in August and September and water it heavily, and you still may not get as good flowering in the spring, but it'll have a little longer to establish a root system.
All right. Bob in Rock Island says, we have a blue clematis that has never been too robust, even after 5 years in place on the south side of our house. This year, it has wilted from the vine ends back to the main stem, leaving only one strand appearing to be alive. What are the diseases of clematis and how are they managed? We're thinking simply of removing this plant and trying another cultivar. Richard?
Well, it's called clematis wilt, where very suddenly you'll have one or more stems or vines simply wilt and die very suddenly. And oftentimes they'll come back. But there's no real cure, no prevention. If the plant overall is not performing well, there are many, many varieties, and I might want to choose a different one.
All right. And last question, Luke in Cedar Rapids. I planted a 3-year-old, 2-foot-tall Japanese maple emperor this last spring. We moved it into our house over the winter before I knew how much shade the area I planted it in had. It only gets 2 hours per day of sunlight at the most. What will happen if I leave the tree at the current location, and what do you recommend?
Well, this one does like some shade, so it does okay in some shade. It doesn't usually have great fall color if it's in shade, and usually it is one that you have to kind of bring in year after year over the winter because it's not reliably hardy in all of Iowa. So it should perform okay. It may not be at its best. But, you know, if you have a Japanese maple and you're keeping it alive year after year, that's pretty good.
All right. We are out of time. Cindy Haynes, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
And Richard Giron, thank you.
You're welcome.
Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. And we will be back again next Friday with Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a great weekend.